You a fan of the NBC crime show Hannibal? Are you still thinking about it even though it's been over for almost a decade? You miss Mads Mikkelsen, but you just don't get Death Stranding? Join us as we rewatch Hannibal and share our thoughts about each episode.
I'm Aromancery.
I'm Jack Axed. Without further ado,
what's eating you?
Episode 1, Aperitif. I can't pronounce any of these names, man.
It's French. I don't speak French.
I don't speak anything except bastard English. Anyways, I'm going to start with your notes since they're first in the doc.
I mean, you should probably start off with just general backstory.
I mean,
Hannibal is a show about a guy named Hannibal who's a cannibal. Wild, right?
I've been thinking about that a little bit. Like, I know that when Thomas Harris wrote whatever was the first one, Red Dragon, he wasn't thinking that Hannibal would become a household name like it has. But at the same time, you have to wonder a little about the etymology. Like, did he just come up with it because he was like, Hannibal, I like the pun, people will think it's funny? Or does it have, I wonder, any linkage? And if you've read Hannibal Rising, which I haven't because I don't hate myself that much, is there any talk about the etymology of his name? Because Hannibal was also the name of a historic conqueror, but...
It's been a hot minute since I read Hannibal Rising, but as far as I remember, no, it's just... He's just named Hannibal because it's a name. I could totally be wrong on that, though.
No, it's fine. It just makes... It's all the time. It's like the weirdest dark comedy, Hannibal the... So Hannibal Lecter is a fictional character from I guess it's known as the Hannibal series, but it's a series of books written by Thomas Harris. First one was Red Dragon, which is about the protagonist Will Graham and sparingly featuring Hannibal. He's actually not in there that much, although his little manipulation reaches all the way through it. Silence of the Lambs is the most famous one.
Hannibal just shows up for like 2 pages in Red Dragon.
God, yeah.
Will Graham just goes into his creepy crime basement where they keep creepy crime.
Yeah, basically.
And he's just like,
they unlock the door and they let him see the Hannibal for a day. And
yeah, and then Hannibal like gets a fucking ad in a newspaper that tells fucking Dollarhide where Will Graham lives. I think.
He does that. It's like the weirdest shit. It's really funny because you usually start out with Silence of the Lambs because that's the best known Hannibal property, and that's the book that I started out reading. So to go from that to Red Dragon, where he's just like barely, he's there. It's not like, you know, he's the reason he's not present in that so much is purposeful, but it's a really weird shift from like Clarice's really intense and close relationship with him to Will Graham seeing him once, and then Hannibal is like, I think that I will ruin this man's entire life.
And then you get to the TV show, and it's sort of a mix of the two.
Basically.
Like, there's a little bit of Hannibal thrown in. But, you know, there is also the, I think I'm going to ruin this man's whole career.
Basically, I mean, I was rewatching the first one. He sees him like once. He's like, oh, I think that I will warn the murderer and then we will see what happens from there. It makes you wonder what would happen if like Bill had sort of reacted like a normal person and just been like, actually, I quit. I don't like this. I killed someone. Bye.
We'll probably discuss that a bit later and start off at the beginning, right?
Oh, yeah, sure. I mean, so what's the beginning?
The episode starts off right in the middle of a crime scene. And we're seeing Will do his super crimey power thing, where he empathizes so hard with a person he's never met that he can understand their exact motivation. Honestly, I think it's a pretty strong opening. Like, it tells you what Will's deal is. You get a sense for what the show's going to be like.
I think that it's a really strong opening, too. In fact, it was so strong that it almost dissuaded my parents from watching it with me because they thought that it was like Dexter and he was the killer. I notice that since that episode, they haven't done like one of those things. They haven't since the first episode. I don't think they've done a thing where he relives the murder in like as excruciating detail and like describes with words exactly what's happening. He does do it because it's his whole thing, but it's not as intense as the first episode. And I have to wonder if that's maybe because of response to the first episode.
I don't know. It's also possible that just like we see later that the modus operandi of the later killers is a lot more extreme than just shooting people.
Yeah, like, true enough.
Next episode, episode 2, has the mushroom person. Everyone loves mushroom person.
My parents actually did like the plant part of the mushroom person. They just didn't like the person, which I get.
I should probably save that for second episode.
You should save it, but that's definitely something to be thinking
about. One thing that I took note of is how apparently the killer, who we never really, like, in the beginning, we don't really follow up on this killer. I think it's revealed that Will's just teaching a class on this. So apparently the killer fired a handgun with near surgical precision, enough to sever the spinal column of a woman's neck without severing any of her arteries, which that's not how handguns work.
Doesn't seem possible.
If you can fire a weapon, which is literally controlling explosions with your hand, well, not controlling, but aiming explosions with your hand with near surgical precision, you are a fucking superhero.
You're in the fucking Matrix. That's what you're in.
Yeah.
I imagine that's just one of those details that get caught in the weeds. Like, they're like, it sounds cool. We'll leave it in.
That or Will just doesn't know anything about guns.
That's kind of possible. He's sort of shown to be shitty with them later on. Well, not shitty, but not great. Thing that I liked, which is kind of dumb, it's just a little true crime thing, is when he was like, oh, he parroted the recording back from another time the killer did recording it, and through that he's able to circumvent the security company. I don't know if that's ever happened like in real life, but it seemed like a very detail, like that's something you could actually do. And
I mean, theoretically, but you would need, you know, a clear recording of the phone conversation, of one side of the phone conversation.
The most unrealistic part of it. Also wondering what era they're in, because they kind of look like they're using they're not Blackberries, but they're like the phones with the big beards of keys. They're sort of like proto Blackberries, so I wonder at which point
it's also interesting because like, the woman who has a name that I can't be bothered to remember because she never shows up again. She's not important at all. She's apparently trying to contact the security company through the alarm control panel. Now I don't know if that's like a feature on some alarms, but don't they normally just call your phone?
I have never had a home security system, to my knowledge. So, I don't know.
You sure so you want to broadcast that to the internet? We didn't invest in that.
Nope. I've heard about them in podcasts. I had one advertised to me, but I never had one. So, I don't know. It was just the closest thing when someone broke the door open to her house with clear murderous intent.
Yes. So, yeah, we cut back, and it's revealed that Will is teaching a class, and Jack Crawford has come to recruit him to his not-Suicide Squad.
Will's just the entire Suicide Squad. He's the special one. He has all the special powers in one really traumatized person.
Oh, God. So, yeah, there's a serial killer abducting women. And they need Will's super empathy powers to figure out why or how or something.
They need him as a profiler to profile Hobbs so they can catch him, basically.
So it's revealed that Hobbs is nabbing young girls, right? Will gives a very weird metaphor that I don't think really works. That he compares it to Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, where the kid is looking for the golden ticket, but also he's looking to replicate someone already, right? That's the thing. He's looking to...
It's a pretty weak metaphor, I agree.
It is.
It's not very good.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe Will just isn't a fan of Roald Dahl novels.
Oh, well, you couldn't blame him.
We go to a crime scene where a girl has been abducted. Will has a horrible... It's not bedside manner, is it?
You could call it that.
I guess. He's just not very good at handling the grieving parents of a missing girl.
It's the murder side manner. You do, besides a crime scene, when someone's life has just been stolen from them, or their life's work, I guess.
So he interrogates the parents, right? And figures out somehow, based on the cat or something. By the way, the cat does show up. The husband can hold
the cat
if he wants to. And it turns out
that
the killer somehow snuck back inside and slipped the missing girl's corpse back into her bed. Which, good on Garrett Jacob Hobbs for apparently being the stealthiest person known to man.
I mean, that is really fucking confusing. Like, it doesn't make any sense, but what in, really dramatic things make sense, right? I don't even know. Like, we didn't even know if he was hallucinating when he first opens the room, except, I guess, the dad's reaction tells you that it's real.
The dad's reaction. Yeah.
The cat's contaminating the crime scene.
The cat is contaminating.
Drops the cat. It's contaminating the crime scene.
I hope they make sure the cat does not eat that girl's face.
It would take a little time for it to get to that. I guess the implication was it ran out of the room, but someone who wouldn't let the man touch the doorknob beforehand, he's like kind of a cavalier about the cat just jumping down all over the crime scene.
Yeah, I guess. Let's see, what happens next? Right, we can choose to Beverly Katz. While Will is doing his I am the murderer shtick, Beverly Katz just fucking interrupts him, interrogates him about, hey, you're not really FBI, are you? And when Will reveals that he did not pass the psychological test, she drops in, are you unstable on him? Wow. Smooth.
I mean, she acts like a curious little kid, but also she spends most of her time with her two friends making jokes about bodies so that they can repress the deep trauma of all of the terrible things they see, so...
Okay, to be fair...
I'm not going
to
hold it against her.
Miller, Price, and Katz, the autopsy room crew, are the best characters in the show.
I fucking love... Yeah, this show has, pretty good comedic timing, honestly, and
they're
definitely just in there for comedic
jokes for how deep and philosophical it gets.
I mean, I need it sometimes, because after some of those murders, you're just I need them to make a joke about philosophy or lungs or something, because if they don't, I'm gonna go fucking insane.
Next. Oh yeah, so Will, to de-stress, decides to adopt another dog from the side of the road.
Oh yeah, I actually wanted to talk about that. So Will is a protagonist, just from what we see of what I guess would be the pilot episode, is he's very cold and antisocial, which are not things that predispose you to like him. He's one very clearly the main character, and sometimes in stories you get stuck with main characters you don't like, and usually doesn't produce a good product, but you do kind of come to like him see things, and I guess that's enough to kind of make us like him. Also, the dog scene is very clear Richard Nixon levels of how can I be a bad guy when I have a dog? But it works. I mean, it instantly makes him more sympathetic. You're like, aw, he adopted a dog from the side of the road, and then you go home and you find out he has or dogs, and he just lives in a house in Virginia with his dogs. Some very likable.
You mentioned something before that Will is the main character, but have you considered that the main character of Hannibal is Hannibal?
I mean, I think they're both the main characters, but I think that Will is more directly the point of view slash protagonist character. Hannibal's definitely the other main character. I think that they're not quite deuteragonists, because Hannibal is not a protagonist. But even though they occupy similar amounts of space in the narrative, and this story is ultimately about them, Will is like the one you're supposed to be rooting for.
Speaking of comedic timing, we get probably the first bit of real comedy in the show's running next, where Will is just cleaning his face in the men's room, and Jack barges in on him, demands to know what's going on, and another employee walks in, and Jack immediately yells, "Use the ladies' room!" at them.
Oh, I love Jack Crawford. Immediately Jack Crawford. Off the bat, incredible swagger, great energy. He yells at another man and tells him to get the fuck out. He's using the bathroom right now.
Oh, God. Yeah, no, Jack Crawford's a great character. Despite being a cop.
I mean, that's this entire show. Despite being a cop.
If you're not a cop, you're a serial killer. Or Hannibal, who's both.
Yeah, basically. What gender are you, cop or serial killer?
What's the difference? Ayo.
Okay, point.
Then 22 minutes into the episode, and Hannibal finally shows up doing therapy with, is it Tobias?
It's not Tobias. He's doing it with Franklin, but I don't.
Franklin, yeah.
That's not his first appearance, I don't think. I think his first appearance, because I have it written down here, is him eating something. I think it's when they're looking at the Minnesota Shrike.
Oh.
And Jack is like, Will, what did he do with the kidney, the liver? And Will's like, shaking, because he's always shaking. He needs like a thunder jacket. He's like a dog with anxiety. And he says like he's eating them, and then immediately we cut to a shot of like Hannibal's food centerpieces and Hannibal elegantly eating.
All the food in this show looks really good.
Really? I find it like, I guess it's like objectively it's good, but like the colors and the textures make it look viscerally like unpleasing. There's like a deep part of my gut that doesn't like any of this food.
I think the food looks good. It's the raw viscera that doesn't.
I don't know. They just like I admire this as a stylistic choice, but they frame everything. Just the colors that they use make everything look a little bit rotten, a little bit gone, a little bit already like the raw flesh. And it makes it very unappetizing. Well, I mean, I'm sure you could write an essay on it.
Every shot of Hannibal's kitchen basically shows it taking place inside the void. Like, it's all so dark and you can't really make out anything.
Just lives in the part of Maryland or something where there's no stars and, you know, his real estate is a black hole.
Yeah, I also have in my notes, why is the lighting in Hannibal's office so bad? Because
oh my god, yeah, that would bother me so much.
I've been to a few therapists, and none of them had lighting that bad.
Even has like curtains, so when there is light coming in from the outside, he can just keep them closed. And probably because they don't have, or they don't want to render the background beyond the set of his house. But also, it's the lighting is, while it's mood lighting, it's so bad. Like, if he was my therapist, I'd be pissed. Like, I like darkness, but I'd be like, why are you always like this?
Does Hannibal do his therapy in his house? Does he not have an office?
I'm pretty sure it's his house. He has his house. We've never seen it from the outside.
I'm pretty sure that
is his study, his office. It's in his house. Incorporated with his house, and the kitchen when we see it, or the living room when we sparingly see it, is also part of his house. I get the implication that he does in his house.
Mm.
I guess you can legally do that.
I mean, yeah, I think you can. You can. Yeah, no, you can do that.
Turned his back porch into like a waiting area.
Jack shows up, mistakes Franklin for Hannibal, and then starts questioning Hannibal. And we get Hannibal's vague backstory, including him.
It's very vague.
His internship at Johns Hopkins for drawing. I wish
we didn't illuminate it at all.
I mean, apparently that's, as far as I remember, that's a nod to Hannibal Rising. Like, he did draw things well in Paris. He may or may not have committed art fraud. Like I said, it's been
you say Hannibal Rising. I remember this just as a general theme that he has, although it is, I guess it like gets harped on a bit in Hannibal. But
specifically him like drawing in Paris, I believe, in Hannibal Rising.
Oh, I wouldn't know, but they do have a lot of really neat references for the books. Like,
yeah,
definitely tell that is it Brian Fuller read the books. I like all the references mostly.
Yeah, no, it's good. It's just a nice nod to the source material.
Also, don't know how you get an internship at Johns Hopkins for drawings. I guess they're just really good anatomical drawings. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, like, someone has to do the Grey's Anatomy art, right?
I've never watched Grey's Anatomy. I'm sorry, no, I'm uncultured.
The book, Grey's Anatomy, not the show.
Oh, shit. I forgot there was a book.
The novelization of the show, you might call it.
Based off a book. Listen, you know? My knowledge is pop culture, kind of, maybe sometimes.
Some medical text.
Oh, yeah. I, like, vaguely know what you're talking about. I think I probably avoided it. I don't have deep interest in reading medical textbooks. It'd probably be too ghoulish for me. This is not related. Apparently, Alana Bloom went to Georgetown. It's really funny because I live in this general area, so it's very funny for me to see the places that I sort of know or know of in this show, and also Alana Bloom going to Georgetown. Famously preppy, but I can see it. It's okay.
As long as we're talking about not the source material, in the original books, Alana Bloom is Alan Bloom.
Shit, is she?
Yeah, he's a dude in the books.
I forgot. I deadass thought that it was Alana in books.
No, it's Alan Bloom in the books. I'm 99% sure.
Probably right, but it's weird because I've been thinking this entire time that she was, because I know Bloom was in the books and was a benevolent figure in the books, as Alana Bloom is in the show. That's interesting. I got that. That would be another gender swap that they did.
Yeah, Thomas Harris did not originally write Dr. Alan Bloom having a romantic subtext with Hannibal Lecter or Will Graham.
Yeah, that would have been a little more interesting, but we got one kind of quasi-romantic relationship with a woman younger than young enough to be his daughter.
Will meets Hannibal, doesn't he?
Oh. Yeah, the breakfast scene, the scene that's launched.
No, it's not the breakfast scene, it's before the breakfast scene.
Oh, you're right. Yeah, Will's just like a petulant little child, and
yeah, it's like, are you profiling me?
He's really edgy in these first episodes. Like, this entire show is edgy.
I don't understand really why is he so angry? Because he's clearly freaking out, right?
Like, he doesn't like being profiled.
Like, he's having these nightmares of the girl who was murdered. I think her name's Elise. Like, floating into the air and stuff. Jack kind of wants to make sure you're doing okay, Will.
Jack's like, I want to make sure you're doing okay, but I don't know how to do that, so I'm just gonna throw people at you.
It's a good thing I have trust professional Hannibal Lecter.
Oh god. If I had like a dime for like every time in this show people are like my trusted and esteemed colleague, Hannibal Lecter, my close friend, Hannibal Lecter.
Show would be if Jack just got a different therapist for Will.
We wouldn't have a show because we wouldn't have this fucking nutbag doing everything he's doing. I mean,
you'd have the Will Graham self-care hour.
Yeah, it's basically
it's just an hour of schemes,
life and schemes of Hannibal Lecter for three whole seasons.
Yeah. Also, a lot of this show is just dramatic irony that the audience knows Hannibal eats people, but the characters don't know Hannibal eats people.
I think that it's actually pretty interesting to do that, because I mean, obviously we know you can't get people to unknow it, but it's kind of a task to take on making a serialized show with a plot and everybody already knows, like, John dies at the end, or Hannibal Lecter is a cannibal because everyone knows that Hannibal Lecter is a cannibal. It's kind of, it takes a lot of work to make that work as a concept and keep people hooked. They already know, like, who's doing most of the things, and the show itself explicitly shows you him doing bad things.
Well, the plot of the show isn't really who could be killing these people. It's, well, what happens? Will Will find out, or will Hannibal, you know, manipulate him into, I don't know, assassinating the president or something?
Manipulate him into committing the Kennedy assassination. Hey, Will, what can you do for your country?
Tell me, will there be one shooter or two? I apologize for
this is
awful
mean to say, but it is really funny. Hannibal Lecter is responsible for the assassination of President Kennedy, and that's the real reason he needs to get out of the U.S.
Right after meeting Will, Hannibal goes, kills a girl, and rips out her lungs.
I mean, I don't want to be grisly or anything, but they're like, she was still alive while he was doing it, but this wasn't a Blood Eagle thing, so I don't really know how that works, especially given the way that she's killed.
When they say she was still alive when he was doing it, I believe they mean cause of death was him removing her lung.
I mean, obviously that's a cause of death, but I'm just confused because she's mounted on the deer head.
Well, I mean, you could mount someone on a deer head and that one instantly kill them. Oh, yeah, Hannibal also...
Yeah, well, I guess he did that post-mortem, because otherwise that would be blocking access to the lungs, and she doesn't really look like she has frontal wounds, like he cut open her chest cavity from the front. It's just a technicality. I'm just, like, wondering what the fuck he actually did.
Because... I think it is important to note that Hannibal stole a deer head just for this.
That's like, this kill is very iconic. I like the look of it, but also, yeah, you have to hunt down a whole fucking deer. I mean, I guess.
No, he stole the head. Like, they mentioned.
You have to either steal it or hunt down a deer.
There's dialogue that reveals he stole it from the store.
Hannibal Lecter breaks into your cabin late at night ASMR and takes your deer head.
Why don't you just buy it? He's rich.
Because you could trace it back to him. It's easier if he just breaks into some cabin. Trace what?
You can't trace a robbery?
Not as easily. I mean, like, if he was just ordering deer heads on Amazon and, like, I don't know, de-lugging.
Do they have deer heads on Amazon? I need to look that up.
Probably. You can order anything on Amazon. You used to be able to buy, like, a patch of Mars... a patch of the moon off of eBay, although I'm unsure of the legitimacy of that claim.
Okay, so a quick Amazon search reveals several fake deer heads. I'm not sure you can sell actual animal remains on eBay or Amazon.
Hey, that's weird. That's a weird place to draw the line. That's a
I don't know. It's probably really just weird, like, place. How would they transport it to the warehouse without it decaying?
Well, that's true, but if it's taxidermy, then it's preserved.
That's like fragile, right? And it's not exactly something you can stockpile in the warehouse, right?
Yeah, I guess it's I guess it's fragile. I think one of the most disconcerting parts of my life, which was pretty recently, was when I looked into taxidermy and I realized that for the longest time, because I was dumb, I thought that maybe they had a little more of the original animal in there, but it's like basically just the animal skin and maybe horns stretched over a really nice bottle. A little disconcerting. I thought that it was like some bones in there or something, but it's just a model. Fish are even more disappointing. Yeah, getting started with the raven stag pretty early. I didn't realize it started like this early on in the show.
I mean, yeah, do we want to get into like the associations with Hannibal and is it okay for me to say that? I honestly don't know.
You shouldn't say it, so
okay. I can edit that out.
Should find a way to refer to it. We honestly shouldn't refer to it at all, but it is a present thing in the show that I don't think they've said in letter yet, but they will probably.
No, like
it's a thing.
Hannibal. It's, the associations between Hannibal and the large cannibalistic deer monster.
Well, it's not a large cannibalistic deer monster. That's the thing. The W creature, as I don't know, we might call it. It's not really a creature. The creature in question that we are talking about.
I'm not talking about the creature in the traditional religion and folklore of Native peoples. I'm specifically referring to its incarnation in the show.
I haven't seen it. I'm like partway through season two now. I have not seen it referred to by name, although the imagery is definitely.
Yeah, I don't think it's ever referred to by name because it's just Will's hallucination. But like it's associated with a cannibal, and it's using the stereotypical inaccurate imagery. So
I'm glad that they don't say it in the show then, because that gives them a tiniest air of plausible deniability. I mean, we all know what they're intending, but if we're going to talk about that issue, the long and short of the deal, as I understand it, contemporaneously present, is just you shouldn't use it. It's not a movie monster. It's a deeply important religious/folkloric belief for the relevant Native American tribes, which I think are the Algonquian. So it really should stop being used in fiction. But since it's here in fiction, we can have at least some talk about its portrayal. The theme as this entity is treated in pop culture is technically on brand. It is associated with the crime of cannibalism. But, I mean, like, it's there. I prefer the raven stag as a kind of more ambiguous but still very symbolic creature to do with, like, carrion and the theme of antlers. The antlered Hannibal is kind of it's spooky, but I could do without it in this show because of what they clearly were intending. You could find another way to spin it so it doesn't look so much like that. They don't use the theme as it's interpreted sloppily by pop culture incorrectly, but it's, you know, if you were to redo the show, it probably wouldn't necessary. You could find other ways of using that imagery without that. I mean, what are your thoughts on it?
I mean, I'm no expert. I'm just looking at pictures in the Hannibal Wiki right now, and all I can say is it does look very creepy.
Looks, I mean, okay, this is a little mean, but I think this is one of the points at which the CGI, it's not bad CGI, it's just, like, so obviously, like, CGI where they just turned his skin black, and I'm like, okay.
I mean, I don't know specifically about this episode, but there's one screenshot where, like, shit, I'm pretty sure I saw this in a Marilyn Manson video at one point. I'll link it in the Discord chat, if I can.
Yeah, it's pretty... Like, okay, the CGI on the show is hit or miss. I would say that that's not exactly like a hit. Oh god, yeah, that's kind of upsetting. It's a little upsetting when you look at it up close with his ribs.
Yeah. Then there's also just stills where it's very clearly just Hannibal, but bald and with antlers. Like it's
Hannibal, but bald.
It's in his suit.
God, is it?
Yeah, no, I can like it.
I remember it being in his suit later it might on. Be too. Sort of ambiguous in the. Oh, yeah. Sort of ambiguous in the beginning, it takes other faces, but in the end, it's like him and it's a manifestation of his monstrosity, kind of like how the. I mean, since we're going a little bit off of schedule here, it's kind of like how the Angel Maker is the burning faces.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a visual identifier. I don't know. It's okay, but personally, from like a monster design standpoint, I think they could have come up with something. It's a little bit simple as a design, even though I think it does its job.
Well, it doesn't really. It's not meant as a horror movie monster. It's meant as a hallucination.
The hallucination of a fevered and occasionally brain-damaged mind.
Yeah. Also, for what it's worth, the wiki does appear to refer to the creature as the stag, primarily. So
this creature?
Yeah, this creature, for what it's worth.
It's worth something. It's not mine to accept, but I'm sort of glad to hear that. A little off track, but
I think we're up to them visiting the construction site. No, we're up to the breakfast scene.
Yeah, the breakfast scene. I definitely saw a lot of screenshots on that in the 2010s. Well, I was a teenager on Tumblr.
There's nothing homoerotic about a man sharing his sausage with another man.
Absolutely nothing. You're right. We're being very immature and considerate.
Especially, it's pretty much heavily implied that, yeah, this is Will eating human flesh.
I actually don't get that implication until, like, later. Like, they had to spell it out for me later to get that. I just thought that he just brought him normal food.
Well, I mean, it says Hannibal says he cooked it, and you see like the satisfied and interested look on Hannibal's face when Will starts eating it.
Well, that's true. Sometimes I feel like Hannibal comes off a little strong, and perhaps maybe he should slow his roll a little bit on his overt murderousness. But I see it in retrospect, but it does like beg the question, like every time when he's feeding someone meat, is he feeding them human meat or is he sometimes it's all
once in season 2, I believe, or we'll get to that.
I mean, that's the only meal in the show so far that I've actually looked at and been like, I'd eat that. Those look like good scrambled eggs.
Well, yes, it's eggs. Also, it's in Will's house, so it doesn't have Hannibal's void lighting.
Doesn't have Hannibal's what?
Void lighting. You know, because the lighting that's just his kitchen takes place in the abyss.
Oh, yeah, because he has an actual house. Like, I like that. It's a nice house.
Will's house is also, like, very messy. Like, you see the table they're eating on is a bunch of, like, empty cups on it.
I mean, he's a single man who lives alone with a pack of dogs.
Sometimes
I have high expectations.
FBI psychological profiler and his 50 dogs.
A family is just you, your fractured mind, and your 50 dogs that you picked up off the side of the street, and it doesn't look like he got vet shots for, so good luck.
So yeah, then they go to the construction site, and we hear the name Garrett Jacob Hobbs for definitely not the first time. And it's always Garrett Jacob Hobbs. Always. You have to say Garrett Jacob Hobbs every time. You can't just say Hobbs or Garrett Hobbs.
No, maybe that's too familiar. Maybe it's too nice to just say Hobbs.
I mean, yeah, but if you're referring to, like, every time they're referring to the guy, they say Garrett Jacob Hobbs, like, the full fucking name.
They do. I never noticed that, but if they do.
It's never Garrett J. Hobbs. Or Gary.
Yeah. I mean, one thing that I liked in the scene when I rewatched it that I didn't realize is he just dumps the entire file, the entire top of like a file box on top of this poor mistreated desk clerk who's already so tired of them. Create a diversion for when he's making the call, but like I didn't notice. It's really funny. Just dumps it on her in the most polite way possible.
Yeah, and Hannibal's first response to Will figuring out who the killer is, oh shit, I guess I better warn the killer and see what happens.
It's kind of interesting, because he's only known of Will for, like, a very little while. He has no precursor, really, to who Will is. He's already decided that this is going to be his first test. Mine works very fast. He's already thinking of little rats.
Figuring out that the copycat killer was a copycat.
Oh, yeah, I guess. But he wasn't there for that.
Well, no, but it's literally what he talks about with Will over breakfast.
Yeah, that is a test, though. You're right. One thing that I was thinking of is how circumstances of the day, which is just that Jack is disposed in court, means that there's an immediate team up between Will and Hannibal, and there's still some distance between them. Will still being standoffish. Then Abigail Hobbs immediately brings them together by the end of the first episode. So we have sort of this steep drop into their really weird companionship because of their shared connection / sort of responsibility for her in the wake of her parents' death, and also in the wake of Will killing her.
So I want to talk about two things. First of all, what do you think the odds are that Hannibal somehow got Jack tied up in court filings?
I don't know, but like I could believe it, because his whole thing is he's just incredibly intelligent and has lots of connections, and people think he's great and charming.
Called Franklin and said, hey, Franklin, can you get a speeding ticket for me? Thanks.
Can you get a speeding ticket for me? Was it luck? Was it his imaginations? We'll never know.
And second of all, so when he calls the Hobbs house, Abigail picks up the phone and hands it to her father after Will says it's for him. But caller ID says that the number is blocked. So here's the question. Who in their right mind picks up a phone call from a blocked number?
I don't know. A guy who's killed like 10 girls and doesn't...
No, but it wasn't Hobbs who picked up the phone. It was Abigail.
Oh.
Abigail picks up the phone.
Good question. I mean, I have no idea. What I want to know is how she heard Hannibal's voice and didn't immediately identify him afterwards. Such a distinctive accent. How do you miss that?
I don't know. Maybe the phone speakers were really bad.
Obviously, they're good for the sake of the show, but...
Oh, no,
I don't know.
He was pulling a Portal 2 and speaking in a very bad Southern accent. I'm speaking in a tone outside her range of hearing.
Do you think Mads Mikkelsen has, like, an American accent? Like, he can do one? Or, like, this is his best attempt at it, and it's just colored by...
No, I don't think he's attempting to do an American accent at all. Hugh Darcy, he's British.
I just found that out watching a blooper video, and it tripped me up so bad.
Which is
tripped me up so bad. It sounds nothing like his voice. It's insane.
It's called.
At least John Boyega has a British voice that kind of sounds like his American accent, but like Hugh Darcy's was immediately disarming. I was like, whoa, what?
It's the power of acting.
It trips me out, though, that, like, so many American people are shit at doing British accents, but there are these British actors that are incredible with American accents. I don't even know how you do that. It seems harder to go British to American than it is American to British. And not that Americans have accomplished it, but still, it's like, really weird.
Oh, yeah.
You wonder how many British sleeper agents there are in American media.
Execute order. It's Tuesday, isn't it?
Oh, God. All I have here at the end of this is, one, how does Hannibal never get blood on his sleeves when Abigail's practically spitting blood? Probably should have rolled up his sleeves, but he looks, like, perfectly untouched by the end.
He treats his coat so it doesn't get bloody.
Does he? I mean, I guess that would explain it. Other times he has, like, the American Psycho poncho to go over his clothes. Did not in this situation, because that would be a little too prepared.
Please write the fucking Huey Lewis in the News monologue, but it's one of Hannibal's fucking monologues. And it ends with, like, tell me, Will, is the heart of rock and roll still beating?
Oh my God. I don't know enough about the 80s, the 90s. Entirely understand that reference. Yeah. Probably one of the more iconic scenes of cinema. The only other thing I have here is Dr. Alana Bloom's fucking pissed.
Yes, she is very mad because Will has become traumatized after killing a man and watching a woman die in front of his eyes and seeing a daughter who he's imprinted on, presumably from entering Garrett's headspace. So yeah, now his daughter now, bitch.
It's like such a mess. I mean, I guess to some extent it makes sense. You wouldn't even have to have like an empathy thing to feel bad for killing someone's dad and then be like, okay, maybe I can make up for it by now being your dad.
To be
fair, he does immediately take
her dad was the one who tried to kill her.
Okay, but the implication is other than the everything, he was a pretty good dad. Other than murder.
Other than, you know, the murder and using her to gather victims and possibly feeding her parts of the girls.
He had a 25-50% normal childhood. Kind of. No.
Also,
other than the everything.
When Will gets to the hospital, Hannibal's already there?
Hannibal moves fast, man. No one. Oh, I guess. I mean, he went to the hospital with her, right? So that could be part of it.
It's just like he's sleeping in the room with her. Like he fell asleep watching her or something.
I kind of wonder about that. Like, do they make exceptions when they know that there's no more parents? They might as well wake up to, like, the doctor that saved their life.
I mean, Hannibal's working with the FBI. I'm assuming you just say, I'm with the FBI.
Does that work in a hospital? Can you just say, I'm with the FBI, and they let you sit by the bedside of a grievously injured person?
It's Hannibal Lecter. He could probably get away with it.
Probably. I mean, half of the shows. Hannibal Lecter, he can do whatever he wants.
Can Hannibal get away with it? The answer is always yes.
The answer is always yes. It doesn't matter. He'll find some way. I mean, like, some of the murders that he does... You don't see, but you do kind of wonder, like, how he even did that? Like, the Minnesota Shrike thing, the copycat thing, was that also in Minnesota? Because if so, he moved, like, fast. He doesn't live in Minnesota.
I mean, we don't know how many days after it was. Like, we don't see Will on a plane or anything.
We do, actually.
Do we?
Yeah, he's on a plane... Kind of interesting. It's like right after I think the Shrike one, he's on a plane going home. Or maybe it's after Cassie Boyle. Boyle is definitely in Minnesota. He's on a plane going home, and that's when he's driving home and he meets Winslow. So I didn't notice that before either. It's kind of interesting though. He just went. You'd think he'd sleep in Minnesota.
Is that the only time we see him on a plane?
I think that's the only time, but. It's something I didn't notice before.
Hmm.
I'm lucky that a lot of these murders happen in the same area, so he doesn't have to plane to get every time.
It's lucky he lives so close to his good friend Hannibal Lecter, who he could consult about these murders.
Lucky he lives close enough to his good friend Hannibal Lecter to show up at his house in the middle of the night barefoot, yeah.
Oh man, it sure is a good thing Hannibal is so close to all of these murders, so Will can ask his advice for them.
They all just live in the murder tri-state area. You know, it's very convenient, great neighbors, good company, and sometimes some very brutal murders happening.
So yeah, is there anything else you want to talk about? Because I think I've gone through all my notes.
Oh, I think that's everything.
Yeah, so this was the first episode of What's Eating You. Hopefully we will have more at some undetermined point in the future.
So I wonder, actually, at this point, should go episode by episode, or we should try to do a little more comprehensive, because when we go episode by episode, we're just kind of going exacting detail by detail from something. I don't feel that that's great. I think that it was more interesting when we were talking about sort of more overarching and broad things.
I don't know. Maybe we'll have a completely different format next time.